Hey everybody, I'm John Bollinger with Premier Guitar. Today I'm with Jeff Tweedy in this bat cave, the cavern outside of Nashville. Jeff, hey, thanks so much for letting us invade your sound check. Your cave, right. Tell me about this.
This guitar I've had for a very, very long time.
It looks like an old friend.
It started out as a custom color Jaguar, candy apple red, a long time ago. When I got it, somebody had tried to strip most of it, so it was like kind of speckled. It looked like it had mange or something, you know?
Yeah.
And the pickups were original pickups, but they didn't work, and the guitar was very, very cheap. I got it at a pawn shop. Back when Jaguars were cheap.
Oh, sure. You know? Like, any idea what year it is?
I think it's like a 60, it looks like it might be a 64. I think it has clay dots.
Ugh,
you know?
God, how cool.
The neck is pretty exquisite. But my friend Woody, who invented this, Mastery Bridge.
Oh, wow.
James Woodson.
Changed the world for these guitars.
Yeah, we've been pals for a long time. He helped design my Martin model.
Oh, great.
Yeah. But he took this guitar from, you know, basically a Jaguar into something that I just wanted a go-to guitar for stages that were noisy.
Yeah.
And, not, you know, just having something with a really kind of bright humbucker to get the sound that I want to hear. So I just wanted a simple guitar. None of this is plugged in, but he left it.
Good idea.
He left it there for who knows, you know, just because I think it's fun to like throw people off, you know, like in the middle of it's just got an antiquity humbucker, and it stays in tune like from like in 6 months later, it's still in tune after a tour. Yeah.
That's great. Well, it's interesting that Fender, I just reviewed their brand new Jag, and they've done away with all that jazz. They finally like figured out nobody uses it.
Yeah. It's a challenge.
Yeah. Well, it's great. I love that. So you basically bought it. It was rough, bought it to your buddy. He brought it back to life. Mm-hmm. And it's now like a go-to.
Yeah. Huh. There's a few records. There's one record where it's on a record called Loose Fur, the first Loose Fur record that I made with Jim O'Rourke and Glenn Cochi. It's on it in its original state on that record before the pickup stopped working. But it's like very, very buzzy, and you know, it's like it didn't have a fret job, and
sure,
but it worked for
Lucifer. Yeah, for Lucifer, that's what you want. Yeah, okay.
Loose fur. That's what it's called, loose fur. And it sounds like Lucifer. Yeah.
That's great. It's great. Okay, so that's an excellent start. Let's see what else you're touring with. Austin told me you're carrying quite a few with you, but not nearly as many as on Wilco.
No, not nearly. That's sort of embarrassing. I'll take the Jazzmaster.
Wow. Okay, tell me about this one.
This is the root of all evil guitar. That's what the sticker says that you can't see anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Root of all evil. Another guitar I've had for a very, very long time. I bought it at a pawn shop in Chicago for $500 or something like that.
Those days are long gone.
They're long gone.
Aren't we lucky we were there for them, though?
Yeah, I'm still benefiting from it, that's for sure. So over time, this guitar got relegated to, has another Mastery Bridge on it. I needed something that could sustain and hold a low tuning that had a sound that I liked and wasn't, I don't know, just a baritone.
Sure.
So this has like bass strings on it.
Oh, really?
It's because it's a...
Oh, wow, so you're all the way down?
There's a couple songs in the Wilco cabin, Wilco catalog that have, like a song called Dawned on Me is in that. It's a drop C, so it's a whole step down and then a drop C.
Wow.
So, yeah.
But it seems like it stays in tune during all that low madness.
Yeah, and it's got all this, you know, behind the bridge action.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That is shockingly loud for behind the bridge, right?
Yeah, it's like, I think it benefits from, you know, just having these really heavy duty strings.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. And so besides the tuning, roughly stock looks, I mean, the bridge,
yeah.
Roughly stock looks like.
Yeah. I don't remember having to do anything else to it ever. I mean, it's pretty worn.
You know? Wow. What a testimony to that old Fender build that would hold up those heavy strings, right?
Yeah, I mean, you'd think that, I mean, it helps that it's a lower tension.
Sure.
You know, but yeah, it's like this neck has been rock solid for 20 years, maybe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How great.
There's probably the strings we put on it 20 years ago. I'm not even kidding.
You need a tetanus shot when you pick up
the
guitar.
Yeah, you aren't supposed to, you aren't supposed to touch them.
Okay, yeah. That's great. Let's see some more.
All right. I collect these Kauai guitars.
Huh.
They're called Moon Salt.
Oh, really?
Like MSAULT.
Moon wow.
Salt.
Never saw it, never heard of it. Wow, tell me about this weirdo.
Well, it's a 80s Japanese guitar. The only person I've ever seen playing one was Rick Ocasek.
Really?
That
fits,
yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's got a built-in, like, you know, preamp that's super, super hot. I have flat wound strings on it.
Wow.
So it gets like, I can do like a super, super mellow tone, you know, like. That's super mellow. Yeah.
Yeah.
See how mellow that is?
You
almost can't hear it.
There's no more mellow than that. So what do all those mystery switches do?
I have no idea. Yeah, I don't know. I just try not to touch them, you know, because like when I do, that goes off.
Yeah. Although, you know, kind of part of the deal.
There's.
Okay, so.
It's got it. They're great. It's a great guitar.
Yeah.
It's really well built. And like I said, I have quite a few of them. I have like six or seven of them.
And they're all shaped like that? Like
a
crescent moon?
There's one that's like sort of yellow, looks like a banana almost. I have a clear one.
Wow.
I have a Silverburst one. They made Silverburst ones.
Wow. So you found one. When did you find your first one?
3 or 4 years ago, maybe.
Huh. And then the obsession went from there.
I just coming across them, you know, and I don't know, when I had one, I think this isn't the first one I had. The first one I had was just exquisite. I don't have it on the road. It's a little bit better built than this one, which this one's great. But I just thought they were really undervalued.
Yeah.
I don't really want to buy guitars that are overvalued.
Yeah, right, you know? Right.
So yeah.
That's more of a blues lawyer thing to do.
Yeah. Hot docket.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's that.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of don't want you to put this one in there because I don't want, if anybody comes across one, I don't want them to buy it.
Yeah,
I want to buy it.
Isn't that funny though, how like something you never, once you discover it, then they just kind of come your way.
Yeah,
you know?
I know my friend Brian Henneman from the band Bottle Rockets.
Yes,
you know him.
No, but I know the band.
Yeah, he was playing Peavey's for a while, and people thought that was where you dispose of your Peavey's. Would you come and give them to Brian? So he ended up with like a whole house full of PVs.
Oh, really?
That people gave to him.
So if you've got a Moon guitar, put in the comments.
Yeah, you can
say, hey Jeff, hit me up. I got your next Moon.
Let's see. I actually showed the Greco.
Yeah, I saw this earlier. Okay, what's the story on this? I see it's got the Gibson bridge on it back there.
Yeah.
Which made it really look like a 61.
It's pretty legit.
Yeah.
And it's really, really well built. I think it's like, you know, 1980-ish. Huh. And it has these pickups that Maxon built.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, they're called Dry Z pickups. They're really, really pretty accurate PAF copies. So I just think it's just a really solid rocking guitar.
Yeah, that's great.
And I have I think the guitar that's probably most associated with me, electric guitar, would be an SG. And so I have a fair amount of those, and I've been touring with a lot of those for a long time. And over time, I've gotten more and more embarrassed about being handed a $20,000 guitar on stage. It makes me feel weird.
Yeah.
And so...
if you could tell your 18-year-old self that was your future.
Yeah, well, I just think I kind of made a decision a few years ago to try and take more guitars that were like, I don't know, that if somebody was really paying attention, they would be accessible.
Yeah.
You know?
Like sure.
Like a good solid vintage guitar. I think you can still find these for a pretty reasonable price, you know? And they're really, really good. They're great.
I love that you're staying true to your pawn shop roots, you know? That's great.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
these are great.
Yeah, great.
And don't buy them all up either. Okay. Speaking of expensive guitars, I guess I should show the top loader.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, it's about time.
Yeah. I haven't had this one for that long. I have one of my favorite guitars is an Esquire top loader.
Sure.
You know, and it's on tons of my records, a lot of the solo records, a lot of the soloing is on that. And so I've really tried to find more top loaders, you know, ones that don't go through the body.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't like them.
Only like a couple years they did that, right?
58, 59, I think part of 59 or something like that.
Yeah.
I think that's the right time period. I'm not one of those guys that knows the serial numbers and all of that stuff. I just want instruments to play.
Sure.
And
well, there's somebody in the comment section that will tell us exactly what years they did that.
They'll tell me that I'm an idiot for not wanting to know that stuff and all kinds of things.
Yeah.
And cats suck.
Sure.
You know, maybe I'm Hitler. Who knows?
Yeah. Get it all out there, people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like, don't read the comment section, everybody.
That's a secret.
So, this guy kind of lives in open jaw.
God, isn't that great? Just straight into that deluxe.
Yeah. That's all you need.
Yeah, it is. That's like the perfect tone. That's great, man. That is like all Telly snarl right there.
Yeah, that's what I think that they're for some reason the top loaders sound more expressive to me and a little bit spongier.
Like, yeah, like I bet they do feel spongy. It's almost like doing the top wrap on a Les Paul.
Yeah.
So cool.
So I like them. I got this one from my friends at Retrofret.
Oh, wonderful.
I've been selling some guitars through them. It's kind of thinning down this ridiculous pile of guitars that I have. And so every once in a while, I have enough money to get something pretty nice. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay,
and that one lives in open G.
Pretty much, yeah. I think it's been in open G this whole time. Is Whiskers over there? I feel like it's right there, isn't it? Like,
so what strings do you usually run? Like bar, I mean, in standard tuning when you're in.
It depends on the guitar. I mean, honestly, if you the three or four guitars I've gone through all have different purposes. So one has flat wounds because I just like the way it feels with the fuzz.
Yeah,
and you know that's That's the luxury of being able to travel with a lot of guitars.
Right.
I have some that have really light strings on them and that feel good to play like that. And then like the Jazzmaster with the big heavy strings.
Yeah.
I have some wound Gs. I have some without a wound G. I think if it's, the guitars kind of speak to me.
Sure.
in a way
tell
that
you
like,
where they want to be.
Tell me where you want to be. And mm-hmm. yeah. This guy I've had forever. It's a, you know, 67, I think.
God, the finish is so cool, man.
There's red on the back.
Oh, wow.
But not on the front because it faded. I guess that was a couple of years where the red would just go away.
Right. Yeah. So it's a three tone. Mm-hmm. It's been reduced to a two tone.
On the top. Yeah.
Wow. That's cool.
I traded a National guitar for this.
Good deal.
Yeah. A long time ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Beautiful sound.
Yeah, sounds great, man.
Yeah.
So do you use the Bigsby much on this one?
Not really, but I feel comforted by it being there.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Things start going south. You can always grab the Bigsby
sure.
and, you know, hover and recover.
Yeah. That's great. Hey, everybody. I'm John Bollinger with Premier Guitar. So, as many of you know, D'Addario's been a longtime friend of PG, sponsoring Rig Rundowns, and they're a longtime friend of all the players with their Players Circle Rewards. I've been using it for years, and essentially, they will reward you for the gear you buy. Open it up, look inside, and there's a reward number. It's free and easy to sign up for. And as soon as you sign up, you immediately get some reward points just for putting your name in. After a while, you accumulate enough where you can buy more of this fantastic D'Addario gear. So as a Players Circle Rewards member, you get discounts on custom products and merch, you get free shipping, and you get a discount on the gear you're buying with your points or free gear, depending on that. And if you're charitable, you could donate your Players Reward points for musical education. So collect those points, buy the great gear, and let's get back to more rundowns. Hey, okay, so why don't you take me through the rest of your rig a little bit. Back
okay.
here, that Deluxe, your only amp on stage, what year is that?
It's a 54.
Wow, how long have you had it?
I've had that, I bought that at a pawn shop too, probably 1994 or something like that.
Wow, how
for
cool.
a couple hundred bucks, I think.
Ah, how great.
It's a D3 circuit, wide panel, if you're into that nerdy stuff in the comment section. It's a wide panel, 10 watt deluxe, 1954. I have a friend that's really great at putting things back to pretty stock circuits. That kind of takes care of my amps, and they always sound amazing. So.
Yeah, that sounds good. And this is the perfect venue for it.
Mm-hmm.
Man, to hear it in this cavernous cave.
Yeah, it's all, I think it's pretty much, you know, the original speaker, original transformers, all that stuff that
how cool.
people like. But I don't really care about that as much as I care that it, you know, it just sounds like.
Yeah.
It just sounds like what I think it's supposed to sound like, you know.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and I bet in this band, as opposed to Wilco, that Wilco seems like a much louder band. This seems like
totally.
like a lot less punishing after a gig.
Yeah, there's a lot of sound coming off the Wilco stage.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Nels has a fair amount of wattage behind him.
Yeah.
I've toured with two Marshall Stacks in Wilco.
Oh, God, you know? That's like a street fight, man.
Yeah.
yeah.
So, yeah, we've gone about up and down. There was a tour with Wilco, the Schmilko record. We toured. I played Champs. That's all I had on stage was a Champ.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that the Champ?
One of them. Yeah, I have a whole bunch of champs. So they were like, they were giving them away at one point in time.
I know.
Back in the day.
I know, like throw one in with a set of strings.
Yeah. Yeah, like if you went to pawn shops, you could almost always find a champ. And I have, they're all numbered because I have so many of them. So this is number 4.
Oh,
I don't know. There's one on my bus. There's like probably a stack of them over there for backup.
So but in this,
that sounds pretty annoying.
I get it. When you're in this, this long, it just happens.
Yeah. I didn't ask for this. I don't know how this happened.
Yeah, but in this environment, having these little amps, it's perfect, man.
I think personally, I think Wilco could get away with playing with smaller amps, and we did. We did prove it to ourselves that we could. And then I think that helped us reestablish where the dynamic range was.
Sure.
So we kind of ended up somewhere between two Marshall stacks
and
champs.
You know?
And that's where we've kind of been for a while. And it's I think compared to most really big rock bands.
Sure.
And not that Wilco's a really big rock band, but bands that play some of the similar stages.
You guys are a big deal.
I don't know. I'm thinking, we play some stages. I know there are a lot of bands that are way louder than us.
Oh, yeah.
And I've had people come out on our stage and sit in with us that have said that. But we still use mostly wedges and don't use in-ears and stuff like that. So.
Isn't that great? And you can hear each other and communicate.
Excuse me?
We
can hear each other. I mean, I like being in the same sonic space as the audience and everybody on stage. I think it's I think people probably get pretty good. I don't know. I would imagine you'd have to be a good band, you'd have to get good at making a good mix for yourself in ears. But I think that the opportunity to put yourself into some sort of disproportionate light in your own mix.
Sure.
And that seems like it's antithetical to the idea that you're making one sound for the audience.
Yeah. And I like the way you guys set up tight like this. It's like, you ever see those videos of the Eagles back in the 70s? They'd be on like a huge stage and they're all in tight like this.
Yeah.
So they can talk and hear each other, and it's great.
I honestly think it's one of the best things to do for a band is to practice in a room real tight without a PA,
right,
as quiet as you can play, and remember and learn how to be dynamic together,
right,
and remember that you're literally making one sound. You're trying to make one sound. And I think a lot of bands don't really start there, but when I started, that was the only thing you could do. I think a lot of people, that was the only way you could start.
Sure, yeah.
It's like you barely had money for a PA.
Yeah, in somebody's living room working it all up.
I borrowed money for a PA, for a little practice PA from my grandma, and I was going to pay her back, and she died. So, sorry to get sad with you.
Well,
I never had to pay her back, so it
worked
out for me.
Yeah. Everybody wins. Okay, so take me through this mysterious pedal board. It's there's not a ton on there, but nothing is marked. I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
I know this is the acoustic section and that is the electric section.
Well,
what all is happening?
I have no idea. I just don't. I like that they all look alike.
Yeah.
And then I could accidentally step on any one of them at any time.
Right.
And just have to react to what happens.
Right.
I know what they all are, actually. This is probably one of the only pedal boards I would imagine in the world with. Until I put this on here, it was all one company.
Right.
You know? So it's all Fairfield circuitry.
Oh, great.
Except for Holy Grail.
Your Holy Grail, yeah.
Which I always get laughed at for using a Holy Grail reverb.
They're great.
I don't care.
They're great.
It's one of the only reverbs that I can listen to that doesn't have this really high
synthetic frequency,
and that drives me crazy.
I totally agree. Yeah. That is the tell on digital stuff.
Yeah.
There's a high thing that luckily we can still hear.
I think some people like it.
Yeah.
I think they think it's like it's kind of signals sort of hi-fi or clarity or something like that.
Yeah, or like an overtone, but it's not
a part of the music that I grew up loving. I don't feel like that you could hear those frequencies
before
the digital age. I don't know if those frequencies were representative really.
They didn't come out of that amp.
They did not. No, yeah. And neither did the subs and all of that.
Yeah.
But there's
So other than the Holy Grail, kind of take me through the whole line.
Well, I don't remember the names of all of them. It was like maybe Ashwin can help me.
Yo.
But the fuzz, I think there's a
the barbershop.
That's an overdrive.
Okay, I heard that earlier on that telly. Can you hit that again?
Yep. So yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So, and you can get really, for as quiet as we play.
Yeah.
You can get really, really clean, almost like an acoustic for
sure.
Stuff, and then
especially in this room,
yeah.
You can hear the strings.
Yeah. So this is compressor. I don't use that a whole lot. I keep taking it off the board and then putting it back on the board
just in case. Yeah.
Occasionally, it's the only thing that works for certain sounds,
sure.
But I can't ever tell when I'm going to need it.
Yeah.
Until I don't know what happened. It's on the record quite a bit. Yeah. I actually used it. I didn't have this on my board. This is the same pedal board I had in the studio in front of me on the couch when I do all the guitar parts.
Oh, great.
So it's like basically the record is
all there.
All this stuff. And I did not have fuzz or overdrive in the studio. I just had a compressor, and most of the time I'm playing through a champ, so you can get the fuzz sound.
Oh,
you can
sure.
get an overdrive sound with a compressor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's hard not to get an overdrive through a champ with a compressor.
Sorry, my ride's here. I gotta go, guys.
Yeah. Okay. So after the compressor, what's that top row of stuff?
The top row is more wild effects.
Okay.
This is a ring modulator.
Yeah, that'll get you in trouble.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
So you can get kind of a nice like.
Yeah. Yeah,
you can use it for do crazy things, but lately I've been using it just like a little bit of a Leslie sound.
Yeah, or, that kind of pulse like that really is cool.
So, I was playing, I have a Vibralux that I really, really love. And I was going to use it, but it was a little too loud for this band. And so this was kind of like what I've ended up using for the vibrato.
Sure.
And then this is a pedal that I think a lot of people use on a lot of things. And I hesitate to talk about it because it really is probably the closest I've ever had to a secret weapon in recording.
Do you want to share the secret weapon?
It's really subtle, but it basically makes... kind of undermines your tone a little bit.
Yeah.
Almost like a tape getting stuck in the.
Oh,
in the,
sure.
It's called shallow water.
Okay.
It's like a million different things you can do. Some of them are way more drastic than that. But if you have like a digital keyboard part, or like the modern Mellotron, the digital Mellotron, and you put that on it, it really makes it as close, I think, as you can get to something that really feels like tape and has this sort of this human kind of imperfection.
Yeah.
That's basically, I just turn it on whenever I'm worried that I'm sounding too good.
Right. I get it, though.
Which is more often than you'd think.
Well, to me, a very clean signal is just so uninspiring. Mm-hmm. But to have a little slop in the mix just feels good. Yeah, that's way more interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just a more interesting sound. Okay, I love it. Okay, and what is this next? This Cosmic or Slap and Cosmic?
Well, they're pretty much the same. This is the same pedal. I remember what's the Meat Mod. They're analog delay pedals.
Oh, okay.
And this one.
Oh yeah, okay. That's your rockabilly roots, man.
Yeah. It's got some slap to it. Yeah. And then this is the one that I use when, I want to get the.
All right.
You know, a little bit ambient and you know.
Sure.
Just big long tails and.
That explains the Cosmic. That's great. That's great. And then lastly is your tuner, of course, but then that Black Mountain Roller Volume.
Yeah.
Okay, what was one the learning curve on that?
Pretty quick. It's pretty easy. It's a volume pedal instead of it being this, you know, cantilever kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's a roller ball that has some sort of detented spots where you can kind of stop at a certain.
So you actually feel it.
You actually
when it
feel
hits
it stop.
Oh, that's great.
When I travel with a lot of guitars, one of the things I've been trying to get better at over the years is, you know, balancing on one leg and and putting a volume pedal at a specific spot.
Sure.
By feel.
Yeah.
To make up for the differences in output of pickups,
right,
and the way that like some guitars are just going to feedback if you give it the full boost, and
sure,
you know, different solutions for figuring that out over the years, having different pedals for different guitars. This is the simplest situation I think I've come up with, and that is just being able to know, like, well, I don't need it all the way to 10 on the Moon guitar,
right?
So I can play it at like 8.
Oh yeah,
and that kind of feeds everything the way I want it to be.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah.
And now there's no guesswork. It pretty much can be really consistent from night to night, and that's usually not that important to me because I like reacting to things.
Yeah.
But it does help getting like having a starting point that you can kind of rely upon.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Okay, to the right is the electric pedal board, to the left is your acoustic. Before we get into it though, tell me about some of your acoustics.
Well, this is a very old Martin. I honestly can't remember what year it is.
But you're a long time Martin guy.
I'm a long time. I mean, I think it's like it's a 17 size or like model from, I think, mid 30s, early 30s, I think. It's named Molly because I borrowed this guitar 25 years ago, something like that, to make a record with my friends in Minneapolis. Called Golden Smog. Hmm. And I traveled up there and I didn't bring an acoustic. So Willie's American Guitars, one of the people working there, lent me this guitar, Molly, the woman that owned this guitar. Yeah. And I loved it so much. I told her if she ever wants to sell it, let me know. And like 15, 20 years later, I've had it for a long time. So it was about 15 years ago.
Wow.
So I ended up with Molly . I named it Molly in her honor.
That's great.
But this is the model, this is the guitar that probably has the most similarity and is what my signature model is based on.
Yeah, congratulations on that, man. That's got to be just wonderful.
It doesn't quite have the deep body that the signature one does.
Yeah.
I really liked adding that element to it. Yeah. But it has, this is a really, really worn finish, but this finish is very close to what we tried to get on the signature model.
How cool.
You know, it's got this like sort of V-shaped neck.
Oh,
that's
sure.
Really comfortable to me. And this is the where my model originates.
Oh, how cool. Yeah, you can tell that's made a lot of music.
Yeah.
That's great. And so this one, and the pickup you have in it is?
It's a Sunrise.
Okay. And normally you'd run that through your board and then out to front of house, or do you run through the amp?
I run Some acoustics I want to have a real natural kind of sound.
Sure.
And I run through the PA and through these DIs. And then there are some songs where I just want the sound coming from behind.
So yeah.
I use this guy.
Oh, okay.
And other Martins that have a DeArmond in them.
Oh, yeah. Can we
hear it?
Yeah, I'd love to hear that. I want to hear that DeArmond coming through that ratty old deluxe.
Yeah. It's
Oh, it's great. Yeah.
It's its own sound, you know.
Isn't that amazing, though? That's like 60-year-old technology, and it still sounds great.
Yeah, they got really bad, I don't know, bad rap. Yeah. I mean, everybody knows I have one of the other ones here that's the kind of the famous Kurt Cobain model.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're right.
Mine's a little bit different. It's a different ear, so it's different knobs than his.
Yeah. Did that come stock with two pickups?
Yeah. This is D18E,
wow.
And I have... There are some D28Es also, which I have a few of those at home, but this guy has like... middle pickup, you know, and... You got drums and you know everything else going on a stage. I mean, I've heard like acoustic guitar sounds that are really piezo-y and percussive and things like that. They don't sound like acoustic guitars to me. If you're going to have something that doesn't sound exactly like an acoustic guitar, I think it should at least be kind of congruent with the rest of the band.
Yeah.
I think people figure out how to use that for their own advantage, but for me, this sounds just sounds fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Boy, particularly that both pickups on. It's great.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Could do worse.
Oh God, yeah, I love it. I'm shocked at how good it sounds, man. Yeah, yeah. That's great.
So there's that, and there's different songs, you know, and then sometimes there's just no, there's just no getting around the desire to hear like a clean, like a really kind of as accurate as you can get an acoustic sound, and I've tried for many, many years to figure that out. And acoustic amplification is one of the hardest things, I think, for any musician, any band that's using acoustic instruments on a big stage.
Oh, yeah, that's what everybody's chasing.
A constant fight.
Yeah.
But this is where I landed with just one pickup through these, you know, Neve DIs, these Neve preamps.
Yeah.
And
you got the Holy Grail in line there too.
That's I don't have it. It's not on, but yeah.
But that was sent to the monitors in front of house.
That's I don't use that in a subtle way.
Oh, really?
No.
That's what you're saying. This is an effect.
This is an overwhelming element.
Oh, okay.
Like in Wilco and even some of the songs we do, there can be moments where the acoustic sound just needs to be absorbed into a cloud of mystique.
Yeah, sure.
Or, you know, I don't know. It's just a way to kind of transport it sonically into something that's not acoustic.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, cool. So when you're at home, when you're not on tour, what do you play the most, acoustic or electric? Guitars everywhere around your house.
Yeah. Historically, I've played acoustic way more my life, historically. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that history.
Yeah. It's pretty well documented.
Yeah. As a songwriter, the acoustic guitar is kind of like the jumping off point. I feel really good when a song works, just me and an acoustic guitar.
Right. There's no hiding that. Yeah.
Yeah. But I spend a lot of time playing electric guitar too. I have a little Vibrochamp at home next to the couch that I don't know. I just play for a long time every day. So
yeah,
that's my one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hey, Jeff, thanks so much. I know you've got a sound check. We got to get out of here for that. But man, congrats on the signature Martin. Uh-huh. Great seeing you.
Thank you.
We'll catch you down the road.
All right, thank you.